Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Thanks for joining me again this week. Before we take a walk into the briefing room, I want to do a little shout out here. This shout out is to a man who just hung up his badge after 41 years of police service. His name is Lieutenant Bob Dine, and he served with the Greenwood Police Department in Greenwood, Indiana, and did it all. He was a copper, he was a lieutenant, he was a chief, he was a sergeant, he was a school resource officer, you name it, he did it. And he just decided that I think 41 years is enough. So I want to do a shout out to him. Congratulations, and go enjoy the hell out of that retirement. Lieutenant Bob Dine, Greenwood Police Department up in Indiana. You know, there's a lot to talk about this week. So let's take a walk into the briefing room where I'm going to give you my view from the blue.
The Briefing Room. Headlines, stories, and all that touches American law enforcement.
Crazy stuff going on in this country. Crazy stuff when it comes down to law enforcement. You know, I often talk about the war on cops. And when I talk about the war on cops, I am not simply talking about the physical attacks that go on and on and on. It seems never ending. I think I probably told you the statistic, but it's still staggering to know that last year, approximately 57,000 police officers were physically assaulted in the line of duty. 57,000 cops. That's a number that's absolutely insane. I mean, keep in mind that there's probably less than a million police officers in the entire country. And that means, I'm talking about state, federal, and local. So think of all the administrative guys and all the folks who are not actually on the streets, but doing the support work and doing the investigative stuff. 57,000 cops being beaten and shot and stabbed and hit with cars and all kinds of other horrible attacks is a number that is really frightening. And it's just going up. It's not going down. And so when I read about a situation that took place in Tucson, Arizona, where a guy opens fire on two Tucson police officers, hits one of them in the abdomen area, and only because of fate or God or luck or whatever you want to, whatever divine inspiration, the bullet hit the belt buckle and careened off that and saved this officer from death or serious injury. But this punk that shot him, what happened was the police had responded to a domestic at a bar. And they were told that this guy, his name is King, had a gun. His name is Roy King. And no one was injured there, and King left the bar. Well, the police were investigating. They went over to his home, and he came out shooting. He opened fire on the two Tucson police officers, hit the one, and then ran back in the house. And then had a barricaded suspect a situation where he eventually came out and surrendered. Okay, so why am I even talking about this? The officer wasn't seriously hurt. Suspect went to jail. Why I'm telling you about this is because the judge, well, the district attorney asked for $100,000 bail, which I think was even too low. But he asked for $100,000 bail. But you know what the judge did? The judge let him out on $750 bail. You heard me correctly. $750 bail. The judge, this guy, some guy named Michael Pollard, he set the guy's bail $7,500. But You only have to put up 10% of that. So this guy who shot a cop walks out with $750. That's insanity. This, when I talk about the war on cops, this is part of it. It's judges who care so little for the lives of our police that they're willing to do that. And the, and in Chicago, it happened. This judge sentenced a suspect who had severely beaten a police officer to time served and 8 days. This is the 8 days. The guy had already been in jail for a little while awaiting the plea deal, and then he lets him go after 8 days. After, I mean, he severely beat this officer. So when I think about, when I talk about the war on cops, it isn't just the physical violence. It's the system itself is geared against law enforcement. We're a country of laws. And if there are no consequences to actions, then this creates a much more dangerous situation for our law enforcement officers. And these are two perfect examples of that. And while we're talking about the danger to police, a situation happened in Belgium. And why do I even talk about it? Because it's a terrorist incident. Two Belgian police officers were stabbed to death. They were together, and a suspect managed to stab both of them to death and then steal their guns. Before he was shot and killed, he managed to injure more cops. Now, why do I bring that up, and why is it germane to this discussion here in the United States? It's because we are seeing more and more criticism of law enforcement officers who use deadly force on knife-wielding suspects. We're seeing bodies in government who are finding fault with police who are simply defending their own lives. They don't think that a knife is a deadly weapon. Well, I'm more scared of a knife, quite honestly, than I am of a gun. That, I mean, talk about a horrible, terrible way to be assaulted or to die, is being stabbed to death. So these officers in France, I don't know the circumstances other than that this guy attacked these two armed cops with a knife, was able to kill both of them and not be shot. That tells me that there's an issue here. That tells me that the European police are much less likely to go to gun than the American counterparts. But, you know, if liberal politicians have their way, they want to go to a European model of law enforcement. There are even some campus police departments who are listening to their idiotic students and listening to these people who are criticizing the police even being armed at all. So when I see an incident like this take place, it is worrisome. And it's worrisome because hesitation kills cops. We have seen it time and time again. And this is one of those avenues of discussion that we don't have enough. Because law enforcement officers have a right and they have a duty to defend themselves. And an edged weapon like a knife is a deadly weapon. I have seen recently such a hesitation that I've seen police officers try to defend themselves with pepper spray against a knife. And why are they doing that? They're doing that or a taser. Now, you know, when it works, oh, that's great, man. Everybody hails that officer as, oh, he used great restraint. Well, you know what? His life is, or her life is, much more important than that suspect. I'll say that. When it comes down to value of life, an individual who is attacking a police officer, the value of that individual's life is about zero, as far as I'm concerned. The life of that police officer far, far outweighs that individual's life. And if that officer hesitates, then they may not go home at the end of the shift, and that is unacceptable. There is acceptable risk, and there's unacceptable risk. And law enforcement agencies are pressuring their cops to use less force. And when here's the thing, if they do it, they get lauded for their restraint. But what happens when they die? You can't turn back the hands of time. If you hesitate to use your firearm as a law enforcement officer because you're worried that politically you're going to get in trouble, or that your department may take some action against you, that puts you in a mindset that can easily lead to your death. And this is what's happening all over the country. In fact, training has been attacked. That is, when I say training, officer survival training has actually been attacked by people in high-ranking positions in not only law enforcement department leadership, but also in policymaking on a federal level. They are deriding the type of training that saves cops' lives. And instead, they want to put in things like implicit bias training and all kinds of other politically correct training, when in fact those precious training resources should be put on the lives of those cops. So when I see what just took place with the deaths of these two Belgian officers, it throws up a huge red flag to me. And our officers need to be given the tools and the support that they need in order to defend their own lives. You know, while we're talking about political correctness, we are seeing a absolute spate of false complaints being made about law enforcement officers all over this country. I mean, we see some really, really high-profile stuff. And what's shocking to me is not only the frequency that these false reports are coming out, but the vehemence, and then the instant support that these people are getting because of social media and mainstream media, the minute that they make a complaint. Let me give you an example. this just makes me nauseous. The president of the South Carolina NAACP just made a complaint about being racially profiled and insulted and threatened by a Timminsville, South Carolina police officer on a car stop. And basically said that this officer was a racist and he threatened him and all kinds of other stuff. Now, this guy, first of all, he's a reverend, for God's sake, Reverend Gerard Moultrie. And secondly, he's the president of the NAACP. An organization that is supposed to fight for the truth and for right. Well, he comes out and he makes this spurious complaint. It goes, you know, crazy. People, you know, immediately start attacking the officer's character. And luckily, the entire encounter was caught on the officer's body camera. You know, once again, I got to laugh because it's the same people, the ACLU and social justice warriors that were screaming, "Oh, we gotta have body cameras to protect the people from these nasty racist police officers." Well, what's been happening is exactly what happened in the case of this liar. The chief released the videotape, which showed the entire encounter, and the officer was nothing but a professional all the way through, and showed this guy to be a liar. Well, here's the thing. The hierarchy of the NAACP should have dealt with this lion creature here. But instead, they said, "Well, we don't even need to review the videotape because we know that the Reverend would never lie." Well, what kind of nonsense is this? These people are living on some other weird alternative universe. So even though this officer did absolutely nothing wrong, he's being accused of being a racist. People listen to it. The character of the entire police department is being maligned, and the leadership of what should be a legitimate organization shows that their groupthink is so strong that they refuse to even allow themselves to view the videotape. So this kind of nonsense is insane, and it's not the first time this week. There's been several high profile encounters. In fact, one of them went viral. That this woman on a beach in New Jersey, in Wildwood, she comes out and says that, and there's some videotape of her getting arrested and getting punched in the head a couple of times by some Wildwood police officer, and she comes out and she says that she's the victim, that you know she didn't do anything wrong. Well, it turns out that she's underage, she's drunk, she's in possession of alcohol, she's got her baby with her, and the police are talking to her. They go to arrest her because she refuses to identify herself, and they're investigating the fact that she's underage and in possession of alcohol. She fights with them. She kicks and bites. This cop punches her in the head a couple times. It's perfectly okay to use force against force. And now the she comes out and makes these allegations, and they reassign, quote unquote, these officers to desk duty while this investigation is taking place. And this is the type of nonsense that police everywhere are facing. It's time that that people are held accountable for false reports to police, against police, and they're held accountable criminally. And that, my friends, is my view from the blue. Yeah, if you're a police officer, or if you are a spouse or a family member, one of the things that is very necessary to help save lives are the ballistic vests and the body armor that police officers wear. The problem with that is that they're uncomfortable. They're hot, especially in the summertime. They get wet, they get sweaty, they get nasty, and it's part of the deal. I mean, you gotta wash them, you gotta take care of them, and that's one of the problems with having a ballistic vest. There is a new product, and I kind of like it. They call it StinkyVest.com. That's the company, and they arrest odors. I love it, and this is really good stuff. And it's not, you don't have to just use it for vests. It's good for all kinds of you know, odors, you know, hampers, the whole bit. And it's really effective stuff. It won't harm your skin. It's really a necessity. If you wear ballistic body armor, or if you want to use it for just home use, this is some really good stuff. And if it's only available at StinkyVest.com, go take a look at it. It's put out by a law enforcement organization, and it eliminates odors without harm for chemicals, pet odors, the whole bit. So check it out. That's StinkyVest.com, and you can contact them, see their products, and it is worthwhile.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming, from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health. Sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
I have a very special guest in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. He's been around the law enforcement community making some waves for quite a while on social media. His name is Mike the Cop. And Mike's been an active law enforcement officer for nearly 9 years, but he's also the co-founder of a nonprofit called Humanizing the Badge. He's got his own podcast. It's called Off the Cuff, and he's the content creator to motivate and entertain cops and educate the public. Mike, thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Thanks for having me. I'm in the presence of greatness. You know.
I
will warn everybody, if they search up Off the Cuff Podcast, that if you end up on a little podcast that seems to be rated above R, that's not mine. You know, no judgment, but make sure it's Mike the Cop.
Oh, really? Is there an impersonator out there?
No, I don't think it's an impersonator. I just think when it comes to handcuffs, there's a wide variety of applications.
Yeah, you got a point there. I never thought of it. Yeah. Be careful what you throw in your browser, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, Mike, you know, you've had a really strong impact on the law enforcement community and also, you know, in the public when it comes down to, you know, humanizing the badge, in essence. First of all, let's talk about your law enforcement career, and then what was it that motivated you to become basically a social media personality?
Well, career-wise, I started back in 2009, and I had owned a few businesses, and that was like 2008. The economy took a turn, as pretty much everybody knows, and I lost some big contracts that I had in my business, and I had watched my brother work in law enforcement, and I decided, like, man, this is something that I've always sort of had an interest in. And so I went ahead and dove in and did that and loved it. And then at some point, the law enforcement community had been such a huge support in my life and became like a big family. And I wanted a way to give back. And that led to Humanizing the Badge. And then as we sort of like got used to social media, it seemed like video was going to be a thing of the future. And we were watching guys like Officer Daniels and laughing at our police department, and I thought, well, man, I should try to do some videos because that seems to be like a good way to connect with people. So I just started grabbing my iPhone and making video and putting it out there, and people seem to enjoy it.
So, you know, when you got involved in this was at the basically the beginnings of the anti-law enforcement media blitz, if you will, and you know, the social media was becoming a real issue in the law enforcement world as far as holding police officers, basically stomping on their First Amendment rights.
Oh,
to speak their mind. How did you get around that?
Well, you're dead on with I think like the watershed moment was Ferguson. I watched that unfold on social media and thought, man, somebody needs to do something about this perception that social media, this power, this leverage that they have over the public perception of law enforcement, because we got roasted in that, you know, trial, you know, judge, jury, and executioner on social media. And so that was sort of like one of the huge reasons to get involved in social media. And I think that because I was fortunate that the department that I worked for at the time, I had been doing nonprofit work already for a couple of years, long before I ever tried to, you know, make a video, that I guess I had sort of already earned some trust on their end. And so, you know, I combed over the policy and made sure that I wasn't going to make sure that I violated a policy and ruined it before it started, and approached my admin before I ever made my first video, and they gave me some wiggle room there. And then eventually one of our higher ups pulled me aside and it told me that his kids were laughing in the other room, and he went in there to see what they were laughing at, and they were laughing at one of my videos. And he's like, wait a second, that guy works for me. And they were kind of, it was kind of a good moment for him too, because he's like, man, if you're making my junior high kids laugh, you're doing something right that I've never seen anybody else doing. And so, and not that I'm the only one, there's others doing awesome work for sure. But that gave me even a little bit more slack in the rope. And I just kind of have been fortunate enough to run with it. And now I work part-time now. And that came up in the interview process for that department. And everybody seems to be happy with it, because I think overall, the money we've been able to raise, the good that we've been able to do in the law enforcement community, the positive overall positive feedback from non-cops, you know, about how this has helped them understand law enforcement or change their mind about law enforcement, it's all pretty undeniable. So I think any police admin with an open mind, anyway, to look at the facts in front of them, they're more open now than ever to social media.
Police admin with an open mind. wait a minute. Where do you find that?
That's like government assistance. Yeah, it's tough to find. Like I said, I've been fortunate that those doors were open for me, because there's a lot of departments that aren't like that, and that's one of the new challenges I feel like I'm putting in front of me is to really address police admins and city administrations, because sometimes it's not even the law enforcement side of things. They would love to do more on social media, but it's actually the city holding them back or their jurisdiction. So that's the next mountain I want to climb, is really doing a lot more for departments to help understand social media and why they have to embrace it and not be afraid of it, or they're going to miss the next generation being able to support them.
As recruitment diminishes, and we're seeing, you know, more of a disconnect between the current generation and recruiters and law enforcement, we have got to become conversant in their language, so to speak, and that's social media.
Yep.
So when you're doing your how many YouTube videos do you think you've done since you began this?
Oh, I'm in 100 and something. I'm not quite to 200 videos yet on YouTube, and I couldn't tell you what it is on Facebook or Instagram. There's years worth. It's a lot.
How do you know? I'm not that conversant and on social media. I'm barely able to use Facebook. And I have somebody that does my Twitter for me, and I'm lost. How did you become competent in those disciplines?
A lot of help from my kids. They were teenagers. So they helped me. They were watching an old, it doesn't exist anymore, but Vine. They were watching these 6.5 second funny videos, and so they were constantly, "Hey, Dad, look at this, laugh at this," and all that stuff. And that's where I saw Officer Daniels, a cop, doing something on social media for the first time, and that's what, you know, sparked this idea of being able, maybe I could do that. But I mean, it's my kids. They are the ones who
can I borrow your kids for a couple months?
Yeah, absolutely. I contract them out all the time.
Yeah, maybe I need to go out and rent some children or something.
Well, there you go.
I'm completely lost. So you use, when you do your stuff, do you use all three media? You use Instagram, you use Facebook, and you use YouTube. Do you do them simultaneously and then push them out like that?
Sometimes I do. Sometimes the content will work on all the platforms. But the reality is each one sort of has its own little culture to it. And so what you would post probably depends on, you know, what that content is, if you think it's going to hit that audience. So there's a lot of times where I'll post something only on Instagram. There's other times where it would only go on Facebook, you know, and never make YouTube. You know, YouTube isn't real fond of real short videos. So if I do a short idea, it's probably not going to be on YouTube, or I'll save it for a compilation later. So it's just about, I think, learning. Once you kind of get in there and wait around a little bit, you sort of like learn the culture of each of the platforms and what that core audience looks like. And then you just try to decide for whatever content that you make, does it fit that audience or not? You know, and if it does, then sometimes it'll be the same post across every platform, and sometimes it'll be four different posts in a day. You know, what I post on Twitter might be very different than what I would post on Facebook.
How much time a day do you devote to this art?
Well, ultimately, it's become a full-time thing, you know, when it all comes down to it, because by the time you have, you know, creative sessions where you're coming up with ideas, then you arrange it all, whether it's you need props, you need locations, getting equipment, making sure it gets filmed, gets edited, you know, especially if there's other people involved and you coordinate the videos and stuff like that. So it's extensive, you know, especially now that I'm doing the podcasting and going to be doing a show, a longer form show, like 30 minutes, 40 minutes, then all of the prep that goes into that. Because a lot of times if I'm going to talk about a hot topic, if I'm going to break down a shooting case, or I'm going to kind of mock something in culture that's anti-police, I feel like I need to do my homework too. So a lot of times it's just hours of reading and research and video watching and making sure that my ducks are in a row. Sometimes I'll call departments or officers from there and ask them questions to make sure I understand the situation. And I try to come prepared to what I'm doing. So it's a big undertaking.
No, it's a huge undertaking. Now, how do you support it? I mean, you know, when you're talking about, in essence, a full-time endeavor, you know, how do you monetize this?
I'm super dependent upon the people who believe in what I'm doing. You know, there's Patreon, which people can subscribe to on a monthly basis, and there's like reward tiers that go along with that that helps keep the podcast going. And then beyond that, it really is just when people believe in what I'm doing, then they're going to get a t-shirt, or they'll, you know, get, you know, a product that I'm recommending or something like that, that I'm selling. And that's how it happens, is really all in gratitude and thanks to the people that say, I believe in what you're doing, so I'm going to support you to help make that happen. And that's really the key right there.
Yeah, that is. And are you finding, as I believe that I've seen this somewhat of a transition taking place, where people are becoming more vocal about their support of law enforcement, whereas, you know, a few years ago during the height of the you know, the great lies of Ferguson, mm-hmm. They were less inclined to come out and publicly support us. Are you seeing that as well?
There's a huge growing movement of law enforcement support. There's more and more officers engaging on social media, more and more departments using social media, and that's inspiring a lot of people who are just flat out supporters of their local law enforcement to promote that and to repost it, or, you know, retweet it, or tell their friends about it, or whatever. So I think that, you know, this, for so long it's been called the silent majority, and I think that a lot of those people are much more willing to speak out about it. So I think it's a great thing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think that this movement is beginning in earnest. But most people don't really know how to express their gratitude for law enforcement. You know, they feel it,
right?
But they don't really know how to express it. And you know, that's something that I think people like you and I and other, you know, strong supporters of law enforcement, we need to work together to try and figure out a way to bring our people and our police closer together. A very strong poll, and the poll said that, if I'm remembering my numbers correctly, 72% of the American public believed in and supported and trusted their law enforcement,
right?
And that went into the minority communities as well. It was just a couple points different, but very, very close. And, you know, I thought that that was a fascinating study, but you didn't hear anything about it from the mainstream media.
Of course not. I mean, the thing about facts is that you either, when you're confronted with them and you've promoted the opposite, you either have to admit that you were wrong and change what you're doing, or you have to ignore them. And so that's the only options you have. And most people, especially like big business media, are not going to be really interested in admitting being wrong. That's for sure. So, you know, that's the old if it bleeds, it leads, right? So you don't want to talk about all of the good stuff. You don't want to talk about reality because reality is boring, right? It's like when 999,998 out of a million contacts go completely unremarkable, that's boring. So why talk about it, right? So you got to highlight the two that make news, and usually it's bad for the police.
Exactly. You know, I was shown a piece of video the other day regarding an arrest in a high school, and it was literally, I counted it, it was 3 seconds of video taken from a phone, and in that 3 seconds of video, it showed a uniformed school police officer pepper spraying a black teenager. And that little piece of video, not knowing anything that took place before, sparked outrage in the community.
Oh yeah.
And I was asked to comment on it, and I said, listen, if you're going to judge that police officer based on that 3 seconds, then you better check your bias at the door, because that's all that is. You want to believe something negative.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I actually find that for the most part, if someone is truly open-minded about a dialogue when it comes to the perception about law enforcement, it really doesn't take long for them to understand that most cops don't want bad cops around. And, you know, it'd be like showing clips. You could show 20 or 30 minutes of nonstop clips of quarterbacks fumbling the ball and then come to the conclusion that says, well, we should just get rid of quarterbacks because they never make any passes.
That's a good analogy. I like that.
Yeah, you can show all these clips, but most of the time, you know, you're going to need a quarterback in order to win the game. So it's, you know, it's just a matter of getting someone to actually sit down and think it through, because a lot of times there's a little bit of a, you know, a herd mentality where if the context of your relationships is generally anti-police, then you're going to generally by default be more anti-police or skeptical, at least, because you just don't know any better. And I find that when we travel around and meet with everybody from juveniles that are incarcerated all the way up to, you know, adults that have spent their whole life with only negative interaction with the police, you get a few minutes with them if they're honest and they'll actually talk to you and have a dialogue and they're open to facts, then common ground is super easy to find. And I think most people are willing to find it. But again, you know, no major news outlet is here following me around having these conversations, because it'd mostly be boring, because showing people supporting the police isn't going to sell advertising blocks.
I don't know if you saw this yet. I just saw it today. There's a new video that just popped up and it's gone viral. And I don't know which police agency it is, but it's a cell phone video of a uniformed officer putting on boxing gloves. It's taking a place out in a parking lot.
Watch that this morning.
And so you saw it too. And it's a street kid who is clearly, you know, in boxing training. And all his buddies are around, and they both put the gloves on, and they go half around, and the cop handles him pretty good, I must say.
Oh yeah, he's a pretty good boxer.
But I don't know about you, but when I was watching that, I was thinking, oh my God, that poor guy, his chief is going to lose his mind.
You know, I saw the video, but the version that I saw had no context to it at all. Like, I didn't see any, there was no description. It was just off of a Facebook video. So there was no caption with, you know, any explanation about it whatsoever. So I have no idea what's going on there. So I told somebody asked me about it. I said, well, context is king, man, because it always rules the interpretation. It's like this, you know, what was that a guy he grew up with? You know, was he a mentor for that kid? Was, you know, maybe he's a part-time boxing coach and this is like he was working, he stopped by and he was just messing around with his family. Like, who knows? I have no idea what's going on. But there is some potential there that if he was really on duty, the guy challenged him to a fight and he's like around a crowd of people that would, if he got knocked out, then what happens, you yeah. know, like, that's a little bit of a liability on both ends. So it's that's walked a line. That's for sure.
I it looked pretty good natured to me, but I was just thinking of, you know, maybe it's my paranoia, but I was just thinking of every way it could possibly go wrong.
Yeah, for sure. But so, yeah.
Tell me about the charitable organization you created.
Well, we're doing, obviously the name We Hopes says a lot, you know, about humanizing the badge, that's what we're about. And we have found a groove with two primary ways to do that outside of social media. We try to create posts or share information that we feel does that, humanizes the badge. And but our work goes into two primary things. The first is what we call Project Human. And usually those are quarterly for us, and we'll travel to a city usually that's asked us to come in, and we partner with local police officers or departments and local community groups, and we bring the two together, and we do projects. We record it. We make videos about it. We promote those things. We share that on social media, not only to inspire other people there, but hopefully to start a relationship with those organizations on the ground that long after we leave, they continue. So the money that we would raise for that, we actually give to those organizations. We don't keep it. We just give that to them on the ground. And then hopefully after we go, they continue to do that. So we hope to make a change locally and then obviously around the country by other departments or organizations seeing that this is possible to do and that maybe that moves them to do something in their own communities. And then we also have what we call the Call for Backup campaign for suicide prevention and awareness and general dealing with the unique stresses of the job. So we do trainings around the country where we'll come in and talk to whether it's police chaplains or critical incident responses or just a general law enforcement or law enforcement family can come in. We've even done stuff specifically for spouses, just talking about how do you deal with these unique stresses and how can you, when you're bending under that stress, how can you reach out or what we call for backup so that you don't end up making a terrible decision that's going to have an impact on the rest of people who care about you. So that's our big, big passion.
The suicide rate far surpasses the line of duty deaths.
Sure
and,
does.
And that's yep. that's a very frightening, you know, aspect that is rarely talked about.
Yep.
And yet it's, you know, no police officer that has any time on has not been impacted by the suicide of a coworker.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
And this is one of those, you know, nobody wants to really talk about it because it's a taboo subject. But
a lot of stigma.
We have to confront it. We have to.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like these are preventable decisions. These are things that if people reach out for help rather than try to internalize it and deal with it and bend and break under that pressure, these are things that we can actually make a difference. We can really truly save lives of officers and other first responders. And they don't have to make that decision. And so if we can at all make a dent in that, then we're happy to do it.
Exactly. So what's in the future now? You know, we're...
There's a lot going on.
You're rocking and rolling. Where are you going?
I'm going to a crazy thing of all places. I'm going to the state capitol here in Michigan coming up to speak at a pro-Second Amendment rally. And the reason they're having me come in is because a lot of pro-gun groups are really skeptical of the police. They sort of have this all the government is bad perception. And so they're becoming more distrustful of the police. So they're bringing me in to speak and talk about, you know, why law enforcement is about a protection of the Constitution, not a detriment to it. So I'm going to do that and then head out to Houston. We're doing a fundraiser with the victims of the Santa Fe High School shooting, those that survived. We're going to do a fundraiser out in Houston for them and deliver those funds. So that'll be fun.
You're living in Michigan and you're based out of there.
Yep.
But you're still working as a police officer.
I am. Yep. I have a great department that I work for part time. So you know, I worked just this last Memorial Day weekend, and then I usually work two or three times a month is what the typical thing is. So I kind of try to pick a weekend that I'll work three midnight shifts in a row and go out there and own the night, be a little sheepdog for a while and keep myself fresh. And so it motivates me to stay trained and stay focused and keeps, I think, my content real and focused for the law enforcement community. And I still love it. I still love the job. So as long as I've got my health and ability to do it, I love to keep my foot in that door.
Well, I can't think of a better way to take care of business than to keep your hand in law enforcement. And you know, you're probably having more of an impact on the law enforcement community doing what you're doing than you ever could just pushing a black and white around.
That's the goal. I came to that point last year where I'm like, I think that I can do more than if all I'm ever doing is driving back and forth to work and working overtime. This is going to create a lot more opportunities if I keep, you know, pushing ahead and challenging myself with the content and really taking a risk to, you know, go, whether it's traveling and speaking or whatever comes my way, that hopefully the impression left on the community as a whole will be good.
So you're available to do public appearances. How do people find you? If I'm an association or an organization that would like to book you to be to do a speaking engagement, how do they find you?
My website is mikethecop.tv. I think right now that's redirecting to some products, but people can always email me at mike@mikethecop.tv if they're interested as well. So I'll have a new website out soon with a little bit of testimonials and highlights from speaking events that I've done recently and all that good stuff. But in the meantime, they can email me or always reach out through the contact on that website.
And how about your podcast? Where do they find that?
iTunes or SoundCloud. It's the Off the Cuff Podcast with Mike the Cop. Me and another cop friend of mine named Dave. We sit back, drink whiskey, and sometimes talk cop stuff, and other times whatever comes to mind. So it's more of a podcast that is just relational. It's imagine getting off at the end of your shift and wanting to just grab a couple of pops with the guys from your shift and unwind, and the conversation goes where it goes. So that's kind of the feel that we're going for, so that people can put it in their car, kill some time, laugh with us and think with us. So that's the idea. But if you look up Off the Cuff with Mike the Cop on iTunes or SoundCloud, it pops up there.
Great. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to hang out with me a little bit here on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
I had the poster of old swimsuit models in my room, and then Randy Sutton. It's like
wearing a swimsuit?
A dream. Yeah. Yeah. a little banana hammock there. It was a thin blue line. You know, it's a dream come true. So
scary. So yeah,
when our mutual friend there reached out, he's like, "Hey, I'm gonna give your number to Randy Sutton." I'm like, "What? Are you kidding me?"
That old bastard's still around?
I'm like, "What in the world? This is crazy talk." So yeah, I fangirled for a minute there. So thanks.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time, and I really do appreciate the impact that you're making on the law enforcement community and the people who we serve.
Thanks. Hopefully we're just getting started.
Absolutely right. To those men and women who are still active duty law enforcement, either as a law enforcement officer or in a support position, especially if you're a crime analyst, I don't know if you have heard of Analyst Notebook, but it's a amazing tool that's being used by police agencies all over this country, both large and small. It is an IBM product, but it's being sold and it's being supported by a pretty amazing company called Blue Light,
Blue Light LLC. This is a company I had the owner on the on my show as a an interviewee on the radio, because he is a retired Sergeant Major Green Berets, and they used this product to roll up terrorist networks in Iraq and Afghanistan, and that's where this tool was beginning to be used, and then it was modified for law enforcement, and it does amazing stuff. I just got back from a conference in Denver where I interviewed people who have been using it, and I mean to tell you, if you are involved in any investigative process in law enforcement, you need to check this out. Go to bluelightllc.com. That's bluelightllc.com, and check for Analyst Notebook. It is amazing. The people at Blue Light are amazing, and you will not be sorry if you are in that capacity, because this will assist you in complex investigations, and it will also help your community. Check it out, bluelightllc.com. If you are an active duty law enforcement officer and you work extra jobs like many of us have to do, you're going to want to know about this company. It is an amazing company, and they're called Law Enforcement Specialists. Now, they're based out of Arizona, but they have a presence in most of the United States, and it's pretty unique. You know, we all have to face facts. That is, the police salaries basically suck, and you have to work extra jobs in order to either make ends meet or you want a few of the nicer things in life. Well, you know, sometimes you have to get them through your agency, but if you want to check with law enforcement specialists, there's a real good possibility that they can put you into extra duty assignments, and they work with your agency. It's wild. I've really never seen another company that does this. So check out their website. It's offdutypoliceofficers.com. Check that out again, offdutypoliceofficers.com. And you sign up with them, and they get you extra jobs. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. Check them out. I know these people personally. They are great folks. They help law enforcement officers all over this country. They assist in charitable organizations, and they're just good people. Check them out at offdutypoliceofficers.com.
End of watch.
Each week, we here at Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. This week, I have several names to read. The first is William Alley. Chief of Detectives William Alley died from illnesses he contracted while inhaling toxic materials as he participated in the rescue and recovery efforts at the World Trade Center site following the terrorist attacks on September 11, 2001. Following the attack, Chief Alley went to Ground Zero and worked feverishly, inhaling a great deal of dust and debris. The experience left Alley with months of breathing problems. He eventually developed leukemia as a result of his exposure to the toxins in the air. Chief Alley served with the New York City Police Department for 40 years and retired in 2003. Chief Detectives William Alley, New York City Police Department. End of watch, May 24th, 2018. The second police officer to die in the line of duty this week, Police Officer Anthony Christie of the Savannah Police Department in Georgia. Police Officer Anthony Christie was killed when his patrol car was struck by a tractor trailer. He had responded to a head-on collision on I-16 near Dean Forest Road. He was assisting at the scene of the collision, was seated in his patrol car when it was struck by a tractor trailer. Officer Christie was a U.S. Navy veteran and has served with the Savannah Police Department for 2 years. He is survived by his wife. Police Officer Anthony Christie, Savannah Police Department, Georgia. End of watch, Friday, May 25th, 2018. The next law enforcement officer to die in the line of duty this week was Senior Special Agent Paul Scott Ragsdale of the United States Department of Justice Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives, U.S. Government. Paul Scott Ragsdale, who was a senior special agent, suffered a fatal heart attack while participating in control and arrest techniques training in Coppell, Texas. He suddenly collapsed during the training. He was transported to Baylor Scott and White Medical Center in Grapevine, where he passed away. Special Agent Ragsdale served with the ATF for 16 years and was assigned to the Dallas Field Division. He survived by his wife and two children. Senior Special Agent Paul Scott Ragsdale, United States Department of Justice, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, End of Watch, Thursday, May 24th, 2018. Special Agent in Charge David LaValle, United States Department of Justice, Federal Bureau of Investigation. Special Agent in Charge David LaValle died as a result of cancer that he developed following his assignment to assist with search and rescue efforts at the World Trade Center site immediately following the 9/11 terrorist attacks. He spent several weeks at the contaminated World Trade Center site. He had served with the FBI for 22 years and was assigned to the Atlanta Field Office. Special Agent in Charge David LaValle, United States Department of Justice, Federal Bureau of Investigation, End of Watch, May 26, 2018. Each of these law enforcement officers made the ultimate sacrifice for their communities and their country. May they rest in peace. I want to thank you for listening in to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on AmericaOutloud.com. Couple things. One is, if you are on Facebook, you have got to follow me. Come to Facebook and look up Randy Sutton Public Figure. Randy Sutton Public Figure, and like it and follow it, and you'll be able to see everything that I write and communicate with me over there. And if you're on Twitter, my Twitter handle is at LT Randy Sutton. And I'm also on Instagram and LinkedIn. I don't know. I don't even know how to use Instagram, but you can find me on LinkedIn as well. I also want to thank my my advertisers. They really, they make this show possible. So if you are in looking for some of their products and what they do, please take a look at them. The first is Blue Light LLC. Blue Light is a software company that does just an incredible investigative software. So if you are a law enforcement leader or a detective, check them out. That's Blue Light LLC. And also, law enforcement specialists. Law enforcement specialists, they provide extra work assignments for law enforcement officers in most of the United States. So check them out. Stinky Vest, law enforcement officers, you all know how nasty those vests get. They got a great product. It's a spray, and that is stinkyvest.com. I appreciate you once again for listening in to Blue Lives Radio. I'll see you again next week.